What's going on, everybody? Anthony Frieda here. Welcome to Badum Biz. All right, today on the show, we got Dana LaMarca. He's a pro drummer, currently performing and touring with Maggie Rogers. You guys should check out Maggie's music, actually. It's really great. She's a pop act. Very talented producer, too. Great singer. We talk a lot about what his experience was like touring with her. I mean, they performed on The Tonight Show, on SNL, all the late night shows and festivals, big concerts and stuff like that. We get into that, and especially from his perspective behind the drum kit on a big stage. We talk about drum technique. We talk about classical percussion. I even sprinkle in a couple audio clips of him playing drums throughout the episode. Please check him out online, follow him, and he's also doing like drum lessons, so hit him up. All right, enjoy the episode. Dana LaMarca, what's up, bud?
How's it going, man? Really good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Are you all the way out in LA?
I am in LA right now. Awesome. And I got to say, it's quite the scene out here. We're dealing with all the wildfires of the West Coast and Western Seaboard here. And it's pretty gnarly right now. I just walked outside and it's smoky everywhere. Smog. And, you know, all of LA is just, I'm new out here. So all this atmosphere is kind of new. So no one seems to be panicking. So I'm okay right now. But there's it is wild. And I can only imagine being someone that's in the middle of it and having to relocate. Terrifying and horrible. But it's just walking outside in LA right now. It looks like an apocalypse. It's like,
oh my
God, smoky. The sun is bright red. You know, it's been sunny pretty much almost every day since I've been here for like 6 months and it's always sunny. And now it's just like very dreary and kind of creepy outside.
But, wow, man.
It's interesting. Yeah. LA's the atmosphere out here is definitely different. Just Mother Nature is different. I'm learning that pretty quickly. Earthquakes, wildfires.
I was going to say earthquakes, wildfires. I mean, it's a cool place to be. I love LA. I love the weather, of course, but that comes with it, of course, right? All that other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't think about it till you're in it and you see it every day. Earthquakes. Yeah. I had my first, I've never like experienced an earthquake, like for real. And living in the Northeast, living in New York and New Jersey. But yeah, I was here it's probably like 2 months ago, middle of the night, whole apartment shook. It felt like a bus hit my apartment building.
Whoa.
It's like, what was that? I didn't know what it was at first because I never experienced it. And then very quickly I realized what it was. But wow. It's creepy. Some people are probably more chill about it than I am. I could not go back to sleep. I was just up. My heart was pounding. It's like,
oh, holy shit.
First earthquake. But that is the harshness of being out here. There's some interesting things. Yeah. Very dry, very hot. It's been kind of a interesting distraction, like moving out here recently, especially with everything that's going on.
Yeah.
So being in a new place has been, an interesting distraction, I would say.
Yeah, man. We can jump right into it. Cause, I mean, you know, you're the drummer for Maggie Rogers. You know, we were just talking before we were recording, man. It's awesome to see you on SNL you guys played Colbert. Did you play Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tonight Show. You did James Corden. You did all the shows. I mean,
yeah, we did.
Awesome.
It's a trip, man. Oh my gosh. The first big thing that I did with Maggie was Jimmy Fallon 2017, so about 3.5 years ago. It was early in the year. Oh my gosh, I just remember how nervous I was. I had done some morning TV and some other things that were, you know, a lot of people watching, some Today Show stuff with random artists, but for some reason, getting on Fallon for the first time was a little nervous. I was, you know, it's kind of intense and it's a very cool show. Jimmy is a very, he's just a really nice guy and very personable and friendly. Goes out of his way to make everyone feel pretty comfortable. But even still, it was like, whoa. I remember being up there and like, just being in the room while the Roots are playing, you know, like that close, because it's a small studio. And it doesn't seem as small on TV, but when you're there, you're like, wow, this is not very big. There's like 200 or 300 people up in the audience, and the Roots are right there. You know, they're off to the way we were set up, they're off to my left. And I remember like getting up there and the Roots played some intro music and Questlove just like leaned into a beat. And I just immediately was like, had that dirty face, like, ooh, this feels really good. And it was a certain thing that maybe doesn't completely translate when you watch it on TV, but in the room, it was like, whoo, this is, they're burning, man. They sound incredible. And once that happened, I started to like loosen up. I was like, you know what? This is cool. I need to just relax and play the song that I've played millions of times and on shows and in rehearsals. Just go for it.
Man, like, you know, the one thing that I've heard about with Fallon and with the Roots, you know, being on that show is that they're all enthusiastic and like welcoming.
Mm-hmm. Totally. About, you know. I would say, I mean, I've done a lot of the shows. I don't think I've been treated as well at any of the other shows. Everybody treats you well, but like the Jimmy Fallon show is really cool. You feel special when you're in there, you know, even being the drummer of the guest band that's there, you know, relatively low on the totem pole for that given show, but still, I don't know. It was very warm and fun, even being very nervous. I still think of it as a good experience.
Fucking awesome, man. It's rad.
Yeah, yeah.
We were just talking too before recording. I'd love to just pick your ear about playing on main stages. Like, I'm sure you've done festivals. Did you guys do any, like, did you do theaters and arenas or stadiums? Did you do any of those?
Yeah, I've done some smaller stadiums in the past as part of I did a couple, they were called YouTube festivals with an artist I used to play with named Max. He goes by Max. His name's Max Schneider. And we did a couple, we played the stadium. Actually, I'm sorry. It's an arena. It's an arena out in Manila. The Arenada, I think it's called. It's the Thrilla in Manila Arena.
Oh, cool.
I've never done a stadium, actually, now that you mention it. I don't think I've ever done that. But the arena stuff and the bigger rooms. Yeah, we've done arenas, theaters, large concert halls, big rock clubs, small rock clubs. You know, we've done it all. And there's definitely a difference in how you approach that stuff as a drummer, as a musician. You know, I don't know. Is there anything specific you wanted to like? There's so much I think I could talk about. So maybe narrowing it down.
You know, I mean, let's just say a bunch of our listeners are a bunch of drum nerds, you know, like myself. I mean, I can, even for myself, truly as a drum nerd and as a fan,
yeah.
You know, like, what is something that you had to adjust with your playing on bigger stages?
Yes. Play less. That's the biggest thing that I remember. Really, I over the years and through playing these, you know, TV and bigger rooms, I've kind of loved picking out the least common denominator type drumming, or at least choosing my drum parts. You know, I'd like to put there's a lot of boxes to check. You know, I think with a gig like Maggie's, you know, a good amount of it is really trying to, at least early on more so, was trying to really nail the record. Mm. You know, make it sound, be as true to the programming and producing that was put into her albums, you know, because there's tons of thought and time that have been into that. And there's reasons for a lot of the artistic choices. I know that you're bitter, but hear me now, I'm crying, no. no matter what I'm doing, no matter what size of the room, I'm always trying to be true to that. And I guess, you know, I've been playing with her for about 4 years now, so there's a little bit more trust going back and forth in any relationship, any musical relationship. So she trusts that when I decide to make an artistic choice that is not on the record, that it's in good taste, and it's not because I want to make the performance better, and not because I want to say, hey, I'm back here too. You know, I'm not doing it for myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do find the most natural and fun parts and performances is when I put a little bit of myself and my heart into it. But that all said, playing less, sometimes some drum programming is kind of complicated. Mm-hmm. And especially these days where a lot of electronic pop music is, there's a lot of stuff that's in the tracks. There's a lot of percussion, you know, there's some drum parts that are kind of impossible to play. And when I learn that stuff, I try to get the composite groove, whatever. Maybe there's a big complicated chorus pattern. I think about what's the most important in that pattern, and I start there. And then I think I start adding into it, whether it's sampling electronics, what kind of samples I think I can cover without sacrificing the feel and the overall emotion that part needs. So start small and then start adding in there. I will say, I guess a thing that I try to do is sometimes it's a very easy answer. Like, that sample needs to be there. It's a signature part of the song, whether it's like just a funky cowbell thing or, and sometimes it needs to be the specific electronic sample. And then other times I'm like, let's get a cowbell in here.
Yeah.
You know, like, why would I hit a electronic cowbell when I could just have an actual cowbell? It seems simple, but it's amazing the kind of life those decisions can put into a live set. I don't know. It's interesting. I kind of love the way, just speaking of cowbells and percussion in electronic music, I think I maybe through osmosis learned that through, like, I was always an LCD sound system fan. Like, I love LCD sound system. And I was able to, I played Bonnaroo a few years ago with another artist named Doparo. And later that night of the day we played, we went and saw LCD, and we knew someone there. So they got us right up front. Like, it was, you know, it was just a really good spot. I was able to see and like hear everything. I even heard sound off the stage versus, it's not always the best place to see a concert, but I was able to hear a little bit of the life on the stage, mostly the PA, which is really where the magic is. Mm. Anyway, it just was so exciting with all the live percussion that is involved in such a heavily electronic band and set. And I always loved that. So
how many percussionists did they have playing with the drums?
They had, first of all, their drum set player, and I'm totally blanking on his name, is incredible. He's look him up. He is just so rock solid. He has so much vibe, and the feel is just awesome. So he has some percussion elephants from what I remember, but the lead singer has like a little percussion station. Everyone has, there's about 9 or 10 people on stage when I saw them, and even like, I feel like other members of the band were doubling their instrument and glockenspiel.
Oh, or, wow.
Or like a shaker. Everyone had a thing that they would, maybe not everyone, but all around the stage, it was live percussion. I don't know. I love that. I think it just adds a life to the set. I think it even just from an energy on stage when you're actually grooving with the whole band that's playing actual instruments on stage. There's a feel to that that is kind of special. Same thing can happen with electronic sampling pads, synths, but I don't know. There's something with like, maybe I did a lot of classical percussion in college and high school, and I don't know, when you're playing just drums with a bunch of people in a room or percussion, there's a kind of cool feel to that.
Shout out to Pat Mahoney, by the way.
What was that?
Shout out to Pat Mahoney.
Pat Mahoney, yeah. All right, yeah, that's right.
His name. So, yeah, shout out to him. Well, I mean, I was actually, I'm glad you brought it up about your percussion experience, because, I mean, it's on your website, you know, and I didn't know this about you, man. You went to Willie P.
Yes, I did.
You did their percussion, the New Jersey percussion program there. I mean, dude, that's a fucking hell of a group to be in.
Kicked my ass, man. It was kind of shaped a lot of who I am as a performer and a person, even. It's funny because the day I haven't touched a four mallet instrument since I graduated, at least not on a stage in front of humans, like watching me do it. But that's just because I knew that afterward I wanted to just kind of pursue more projects with drum set, you know, standard trap kit, drum set stuff. But oh my God, it was so much more than just I learned so much more from that than just the specific, my Stevens grip, you know, like, I don't know. It was just so much more of the discipline of being part of an ensemble and the camaraderie. I mean, and just being able to kind of figure out how to handle really complicated pieces.
Oh yeah.
You know, how to dissect it and, you know, create a schedule on how to practice it.
Yeah.
You know, looking at one lick and being like, cool, this one is the one that's going to kill me. So I have to make sure that I frequently practice this. And then behind the scenes or behind that, I'm going to do passes of the whole piece or other larger sections. I don't know. You prioritize certain things. And I think that knowledge and like education came really handy when it came to like learning a lot of music at once, a lot of other, you know, pop music, prioritizing the songs, you know, sometimes, like I said before, when you're learning a lot of drum grooves that are programmed, some of that shit is impossible, you know, or it seems really impossible because it was created in a box. A lot of times not by a drummer or someone that's thinking about how a drummer is going to play this. But there's definitely a little bit of a competitive nature in my head where it's like, I can do that.
Yeah.
If I shed this, I can do it, you know? And I always try to do it. And I either pick the time where it's like, cool, Dana, just simplify it, make it feel good. Or like, shed it for another week and I think it'll feel really good and it'll be worth all the effort. Sorry, I keep going on tangents.
That's okay.
I had a lot of coffee just now. But anyway, yeah, so like, yeah, that a lot of weird things that I didn't realize would be so valuable came out of that department. As most college experiences for young people are, they're, it's a new chapter in everyone's life. So I don't know, that really defined my early 20s, you know, that was like such a big part of it.
I mean, I bet you could, you know, immediately go, oh yeah, totally. Like playing quintuplet, like fives over two counts and sevens over, you know, and you're doing it in unison with other players. You're doing it, like you were saying, four mallets, right? So and you're on some weird combination of weird instruments and, I mean, like, and you have, like you said, it's like, all right, I'm looking through the piece. There, that rhythm right there is going to kick my ass. So let me schedule, like, every morning I'm going to come in here and practice that part to, like, you know, 40 beats per minute. I'm just going to get it clean, you know? I mean, that metronome becomes your best friend for sure.
Exactly, yeah. That was it. I mean, yeah, some of that stuff, I can't believe. No, I'm not trying to pat my own back here, but, man, there's some composers out there that just write some ridiculously difficult music. Have written it. And it was such a, I still love that stuff. I still go back and like listen to some John Cage, you know, all the constructions, which we did a lot.
Did you play third?
I did the third construction. I played that on my senior recital, actually.
Same here, man.
Yeah,
I love that piece.
It's one of my favorite pieces.
Yeah, man.
But it's just like such dense music. And it's almost a miracle that, I guess, going back to like playing and trusting the people that are on your stage or that are playing, that you're performing with. Mm. I don't think I learned that I don't think I learned that lesson like completely or as much as performing that piece with like some of my best friends in college, you know, learning how to trust and learning how to like feel where everyone's internal pulse is of the piece. 'Cause it just moves around, you know, it's a miracle how certain things happen and then everyone can just know where one is.
Yeah.
You know, and that comes from rehearsing and being aware and practicing and knowing each other, but still it's gotta, you know, it's amazing. Yeah, I love that stuff. And I plan on revisiting that at some point in my life. Right now I'm nerding on more, I guess, accessible music, but I love that. I still love that stuff.
Well, all of that, like, what would you call it? I guess you could call it like your measurement of time. I mean, really, that's what it is. And then that connection you were talking about with other players, like that can, when you're connected on that level.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you're feeling somebody else is playing and it's become one sound,
mm-hmm.
two of your sounds or the four of your sounds, one sound. I imagine you bring that to the stage.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's so different playing modern pop music, especially, you know, when, you know, the way Maggie's set is designed and a lot of pop sets that I've done, you're on a grid, you know, there's a lot of playback. So there's a metronome for most of the songs with Maggie, and everything else that I've done the last few years. So there is all of that where like there is this guide that's taking you through the track or like this grid that you have to consider, whether it's helping you or working against you at any point. That's kind of circumstantial, but there is that energy you just described of like just playing John Cage with great musicians. That energy still is relevant and necessary for stuff to line up. And there are moments where you really are like, there's all this BS in our ears, but I still feel how everyone's locking in. Like there's still magic there. There's room for that kind of magic. And that's what makes some of the greatest pop bands sound great, you know, when they could still play through all the bullshit.
Yeah.
Consider it, but, you know, play through it.
Can I ask you, because I listened to Maggie's album this morning, actually, while I was running.
Cool.
Fucking great. I mean.
Oh, man. Her latest one?
The album is called, I'm terrible with like names, but I have it right here. This was in my recent listen. Where is it? What was it? Past Time, right?
Or Heard in the Past Life.
Heard in the Past Life. That's what it is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I listened to that this morning, though. And I'm listening. Now, she's a producer. She started as a producer, right?
Yes. I mean, yeah, songwriter, producer. She kind of does it all. She has tons of experience with both of those things. Yeah. Performer, everything.
So when you're taking something like she, you know, I imagine she produced a lot of those beats or came up with the idea, the structure of it. I mean, they're pretty unique. They sound really, really cool. How does somebody like yourself, you come in, all right, and like you said, okay, these sounds are probably going to stay because they make the song unique.
Yeah.
Where do I fit in? Now, do you and is it like a group thing where, all right, Danny, you're going to play, I definitely want that snare on 2 and 4, obvious, stuff like that. Or are you trusted to kind of fill in parts?
Yeah, it's both. On Maggie's gig, I think it definitely changes on what gig you're on. And it definitely changes from song to song within that gig. And a lot of time it's input from Maggie. It's also our musical director, Brian Kesley, who's a badass and my good friend, and he will be like, he'll give me some notes. Yeah, this one, you know, this is what I'm feeling. So I'll try to do what everyone is suggesting. And then if I feel strongly like, man, I really think this needs something a little more in this section, maybe I'll try something out. Sometimes you just try something and see if anyone looks at you. And if no one does, you just keep doing it. I'm not going to lie to you. That's kind of a thing. Sometimes it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. But more to your point, it depends. The more experience you have with interpreting electronic music, the more you kind of figure out what your voice is, and certain decisions become more clear more quickly. But a good example of like some kind of just kind of a path that had many different versions, like the Falling Water is one of Maggie's songs, and that was a big one for her, and a very powerful tune, and it's a very interesting tune because it doesn't follow pop structure. I think the actual record version, I don't think she's ever made a radio version of it, but it's like 5 or 6 minutes, I think. It's a long tune, and there's a metric modulation in the end. It's not a modulation. It just slows down a whole bunch for the last third of the song. It's kind of, it's interesting. It's really amazing. Anyway, that one was tricky because it's a relatively simple, you listen to it, it's a very simple groove. But it went through a lot of forms to make it feel right. And that came from a couple different things. One was that I was playing, when I first started playing it, I played a lot of it on like an SPD and then external pads. So like when I started, I was just using that a lot. And that creates a whole different feel. You want to play it differently when you're playing that kind of stuff. And that kind of evolved into adding, like there's kind of this bass drum kind of floor tom, low pitched drum sample that's part of the like the main hooky groove of it. And at my first reaction was like, cool, this is very specific and I want to use the samples for this. I want to nail this. But just through trial and error, that floor tom sample, I started playing as a flam on, I play with two floor toms pretty often with her. So I started using the floor toms and that kind of just opened up the space of the groove. And I realized how much space I actually really needed to fill. And in that, there was a way that the acoustic floor toms were filling that space in a way that the electronic pads just weren't. Wow. And then through the cycle of things, that was making me play the groove differently, in this case, in a better way. And so that started to influence me in a different way because I was filling space differently. And then before I knew it, and I'm talking about like even these simple little adjustments was probably like, I don't know, 3 to 5 months of touring where I like started to like morph it a little bit. And I think it was right before we did SNL because we played this song, Falling Water, on SNL. We worked with a different MD for that. This guy, Drew Tabenfeld, out here in LA. Rehearsed in New York. He lives out here. He's a killer guy, killer MD and musician. And I played the pads at first because I was like, this is TV. Let's make it clean and let's nail the produced thing. And I think he was like, man, is there anything you could do to open up that drum groove? Because I'd been toying with it. I went back to kind of safe, play it like the record vibe. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned, is there anything you could do to open up? And I was like, funny you should ask, Drew. I was playing it like this for the last couple of shows. And sure enough, I got he gave me the confidence to be like, play the floor toms from now on. Because that sounds, it just opens up the thing. So in that particular case, this is a very simple, maybe a little bit boring version of this, but in that particular case, it's just like trial and error, just a simple thing of playing floor toms instead of a low pitched drum sample on a pad created a world of difference to the song and the performance. And I've never played it differently after that. Just used the floor toms. There's definitely some backbeat samples that I use. And I think as a rule of thumb is I'm always try to make it happen acoustically. I kind of lean that way a little bit when I'm working with electronic music. I just think it does add more life to the set.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, for listeners, I mean, basically what Dana's talking about is, you know, Maggie's songs or whoever artist he's working with sometimes have very specific drum samples, and they kind of create the character, the personality of the song. They're very important. So you take those samples, Dana takes those samples, he puts it on some sort of computerized machine, whatever you want to call it, that he can basically hit a rubber pad and get that sample.
Right.
So what you pretty much wanted to do, though, was, because when you're hitting a rubber pad, and you're a percussionist, right? It's a different, it almost doesn't satisfy the onstage as far as the onstage volume. It doesn't satisfy that punch.
It doesn't, no. It's different. Yeah, and yeah, there's just less fun frequencies just as a from a sonic thing, you know? When you hit an actual acoustic drum, yeah, there's some harshness that comes out of there. We have, with Maggie, we toured this incredible monitor person. This guy, Mike Robinson. No, I'm sorry, not Mike Robinson. Mike Sassano. Mike Robinson is a drummer friend of mine. I don't know why I said that. Anyway, Mike Sassano. So he makes everything sound kind of incredible, no matter what, electronic or acoustic, in my ears. But yeah, you're right. There's a certain, just even through the with the best monitor person in the world, like there's still an energy that live acoustic instruments give me that sometimes sampling doesn't quite do as much. There are definitely scenarios where it's the opposite of that, but I tend to lean on acoustic drums and making it happen that way.
Same here.
At least right now.
Yeah, same here, man. I mean, and you know, and another little detail for listeners is you're picking these sounds sometimes or rearranging what you're playing while maintaining a beat already, like whether it's your kick drum constantly doing one, you know, four on the floor, or hey, maybe your left hand and your kick are doing something, and then that right hand's free to do something, right? So now, you know, Dana has to, when you're inspired, right, to like, you know what, I want to hear this particular sound instead of the sample or whatever, you know, you have to make that choice while maintaining the song.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and just for listeners who don't know what drummer, you know, a drummer's life is like, you're also doing that to a click. You're doing that to a grid. You can't fuck up.
Yeah.
There's no room for it, right? So
not at all.
Respect, of course, you know, much respect.
You said a really good thing. The click is your friend, and it's important to always kind of feel that way. Mm-hmm. Not that the click is your boss, but it's your friend, and you play with it as if it's another musician.
Yeah.
There's actually this really excellent drumeo with a drummer named Matt Johnson, who played on Jeff Buckley's Grace. He tours with St. Vincent. He has an incredible touring and musical career. And he's just an incredibly great drummer, incredibly smart guy. And he talks about playing live with a click. I think it's generally just with a click, whether recording or live. I honestly just encourage anyone to check out that drumeo because it's fascinating. There's some stuff that he talks about that might seem abstract, but it's just right on. It's definitely not a drummy, like, you know, like lick, fast hand oriented drumeo. This is a very philosophical drum lesson, but he talks about playing with the click. And I always remember this. I don't know why this had such a like impact on how I think about playing with a click now, but he says that the click is a towel rack. And your goal is not to become the towel rack or the click. Allow yourself to just be the towel that's hanging on it. You know, let it guide you, let it help you, let it hold you up. I don't know, a combination of that analogy and just make it part of your percussion section. Make it feel good. You don't have to become the metronome.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, in a lot of when there is a lot of playback involved, I mean, good default is to play right on the click, but I do find opportunities where it just feels better when I'm just above the click and my energy is just like, just a hair on top and pushing forward, helping glue the band and the playback. I think that's a pretty good role that I try to take on from a song to song scenario, but I'm considering all that. I'm helping the artist and the people on stage glue to the playback in a certain way. As a drummer, that I play reasonably loud, you know, like I try to hit the drums with purpose. So if you play like that, you have that responsibility. You have a loud instrument on the stage. So everyone is definitely responsible for their own sense of time and rhythm. But you having a very loud instrument on the stage, I feel responsible for gluing, you know, playback and band.
So for listeners, playback is basically, you know, again, like there are certain sounds on the on somebody like Maggie's songs. So everything is to a click. Everything is gridded out. Everything's in time. And there are like parts of the song that maybe there's not enough personnel on stage to perform all the parts that are playing alongside with the band. But it's somebody like Dana who absolutely has to keep with that grid, you know? Yep. And like, I actually never heard, man, I got to tell you, I'm fascinated by it. What you're talking about being like, and I know what you mean, where it's like a hair ahead or on top of the click tracker. And that's funny how you say, as soon as you mentioned how it makes the band and the playback meld together better. Yeah. I mean, that I've never heard that. That's cool, man.
Sometimes ahead, sometimes behind. Actually, there are so many different philosophies and thoughts about this. I actually found that sometimes when I was just feeling like when I put the image of being the towel on the towel rack in my head, I found that it felt like I was hanging back.
Oh, wow. But
in reality, I was playing right on it, like in a way that I had never played before. Wow. I mean, it just opens up the space in between your notes, thinking like that, instead of thinking like, gotta nail this. It's like trying to hit bullseyes at a very impossible rate. When you just think of it as this, you know, when you think of it as the towel on the rack, it's just more relaxing than play right on the grid. And so much of my philosophy as a drummer has changed, whether playing in a relaxed way, I guess a relaxed approach with the click. You still have a responsibility to play on it. It's got to be rock solid.
Yeah.
But you could, when you're relaxed, you could start enjoying and messing around with it a little bit. And then also physically hitting the drums in a relaxed way and thinking about that and applying those philosophies. I don't know. That stuff. Whoops. Sorry.
That's cool.
That has been a big concentration for me as a drummer these days. I'll go a little further with it. About a year ago, it was June 2019. I'll go even further back. Early on in Maggie's touring, I started developing tendonitis in my forearms and in my wrists. So it was some pretty heavy tendon pain. The first year of touring with Maggie was kind of tricky. I was doing a lot of, you know, I was sleeping with a brace on. I was pretty much had a brace on my right wrist. For that whole year, like during the day, and then I'd play at night. And I didn't know what to do. I was taking a lot of ibuprofen. I was trying to, the shows had to happen. And it went out of, in and out of being really severe and painful and scary. And then being like fine, like at least bearable, you know. But when you have a whole year of touring ahead of you and you're like kind of halfway through rehearsal and you're in pain, like, damn, this is stressful. So that whole weird experience has brought me into what can I do that's not unhealthy for me? Like, I taking ibuprofen every day is not a, that's not a reasonable cure for that. You know, it's an easy thing to do, but not good for you, you know? So I just tried to find ways of living and playing and thinking and habits to like get through it. And you know, some of the things that, that I wound up doing is like stretching, doing like 5 or 10 minutes of stretching before every rehearsal, show, practice session, no matter what. So that was really started to helpful. That started to be helpful. I then, I started just try to just in my own brain, just play a little more relaxed. Think about the grip of the stick, loosen up. And just through those two things, I started to feel a little bit better. So fast forward to about a year ago, I was in LA. I was staying here for a few weeks just between Maggie shows. And I took a lesson with a drummer named Dave Elitch out here. Took two lessons with him.
Yeah.
Man, that guy really, he just ingrained the idea. I thought I was relaxing. I thought I was doing a good job. But he flipped my world upside down in a very good way. I didn't realize how much further I could go with relaxed, low tension playing. He's the king at it. And it's amazing because he plays, or he's capable of playing extremely hard and loud, but he does so in a way that's completely healthy. And I don't know, hearing him play in a room with this kind of relaxed approach, his sound, like I was talking about playing, like hearing Questlove in the same room, you're like, oh my gosh, it's different than seeing it on TV or recording. And then hearing Dave play in that lesson room, he just started just playing a pocket groove, really implementing his like every motion being this very relaxed, intentional, but relaxed, intentional, that's not a word. Each stroke was with intent, yes, but it was just so relaxed and open. And his sound in the room just blew me away. I was like, good God, what's up with this? So it was about 2.5 hours worth of lessons. Probably 3.5 hours worth of lessons. We did two lessons a week apart. I had a lesson for about 2 hours. I did a shed for a week and then another lesson for an hour the following week. And just that, those two things just totally opened up everything. So physically my drumming, I felt better. I was relying on my tendons as much. I was relying on my tendons less and gravity more. His stuff, his work with posture.
Yeah.
Just game changer stuff. And he recommended a deep tissue masseuse out here that also just blew me away. Like literally I didn't have any tendonitis pain for like 6 months after I got the deep tissue massage. I had no idea how important it was. It was so painful. It was 3 hours. She did an hour on each of my arms and then like a half hour cool down. And it was incredibly painful. But okay, long story short, that lesson, this deep tissue massage, and then implementing like very strict stretching regimens before, after my shows, icing after like every third show, stopped taking ibuprofen, started taking turmeric supplements. And it took a second to really feel like I overcame this thing, but it took maybe 6 months to feel that. But this is after 3 years of dealing with it. Wow. So in the scheme of things, it was like, yeah, that summer kind of changed my life. Elitch, deep tissue, and just talking to some like really good holistic specialists, it was wild. So since then, I've kind of changed the way I play a bit. He kind of opened up this door where I've interpreted a lot of the great stuff that he gave me, and in ways that didn't completely, you know, I took those lessons with Dave, but then I had gigs like the next couple weeks, so I couldn't like right from the bat implement that. It's like playing right-handed on a right-handed kit 1 week and then playing on a left-handed kit the next week. Like I couldn't just do that without practicing. that's a severe analogy, but you get what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. I took a lesson with Dave too, like 2 years ago.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I was in LA for the day, literally just for the day. And I went for that reason. Yeah, man. I mean, everything you said, like listeners, if you're drummers, if you can, man, try it. I guess he does virtual lessons too, but he also has like
exclusively now. Yeah.
And he has like an online like video lesson series you could purchase. Dude, tell me straight up, his grip is genius, right?
It's genius. It's great.
And truly. And it gives you
I haven't, I have to say I have not mastered the grip yet. I have not. I've taken some pieces of it and I've used it. Him and I worked a lot on feet when we went, and that just I remember going to like the first sound check after and just thinking in a more relaxed way and maybe shedding stuff for 2 weeks. And I don't know. I just remember the sound of the bass drum just filling the room better, you know? And I think everyone felt it too. And I playing quarter notes during sound check and, you know, just for testing, you know, getting the mic level and the kick. And it was noticeable. It just sounded bigger. It filled the space between my notes better. Just thinking of this relaxed, you know, way. I was also going from, I've always gone between beater in and beater off my whole life.
Yeah.
I started, you know, as a young drummer, beater in, and then I kind of started getting into the jazz world a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to feather and beater off idea. Mm-hmm. And then I just got into beater in again because I just saw a lot of pop drummers that were getting this punchy. There's plenty of people that really nail that technique, but I didn't realize that like that wasn't benefiting the way I play the drums. So now I went back to beater off. So a big part of the sound is just learning, just redoing the beater off technique as an exclusive thing. But the way Dave teaches you, it's just like, even more so another step forward for that approach. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the stick technique alone, and I agree with you with the bass drum technique. Yeah, I mean, it's the use of gravity, but really, it's for comfort as far as letting the stick or letting your legs relax after impact.
Sure. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, but dude, I noticed it in my recording immediately with the snare drum hits. I mean, total difference. I wasn't hitting as hard, but the sound was for any drummers out there, he basically gets you to get that snare or get that kick drum or whatever drum to resonate at its fullest, you know? And when all of those lugs are in tune with each other, I mean, the sound just pops. Same with with the kick. I mean, and it's so funny you said that. It's so funny because that when you talked about when he played in the room, in his lesson room.
Right.
Like, holy shit. You know, you feel it in your body but you're looking at him and it's animated, but you see, he's not working hard, you know, it's amazing. I still have the video from the lesson. He was so cool. Let me like kind of record.
Yes.
I can always go back to it. It was a nice dude too, man. Really good.
Great guy. Him and I have gotten real friendly since moving out here. He's a good, really good guy. He came out to a Maggie show last year. I was actually nervous when he was there. I was like, oh shit, got this guy here watching me. Like, what's going on? I actually had two really great drummers there, so it made me a little nervous. But it was at the Greek. Show was great. It was really fun. We had a great hang after. It's cool. He's a great dude. He's a very big part of the drumming world out here for sure.
Definitely, dude. Mm-hmm. Oh man. I had another question for you about that's probably more drum nerdy shit.
We could talk about that.
Well, actually I wanted to jump into real fast just for any drummers out there. You know, this is a guy, man, he's got experience. Like you're doing virtual lessons, right? You're trying to get that up and running, right? Or you got it up and running.
Yes, I do. I've taught since I was like 16, you know, beginner. I usually, like, I started teaching kids at 16, beginner children, you know, and that was like my first experience with teaching. I've been lucky to have some great teachers, that kind of instilled this really cool camaraderie and just kind of enthusiastic love for drumming that I try to just, you know, put into my lesson. So I started teaching at 16 and taught my way straight through college. I started touring more when I was 26. So once I started touring more, I started teaching less. Haven't really been teaching too much the last couple years, but it starting the top of this year, I started teaching a little bit more, like lessons when I was back in Jersey, I would take some students, and it was more so one-off lessons with, you know, some people just to get my overall take on random big picture music or drumming ideas. Anyway, and now it's been cool because I, through what's happening right now with the world, I'm kind of stuck in one place. I haven't been touring, so it's been an opportunity for me to start teaching again remotely, virtually. And I've taken all the stuff that I've learned over the years just through playing, playing, you know, in various, you know, in the situations that I've been in, and revamped the way I approach it. Obviously, like this kind of low tension, just relaxed nature of thinking and moving has made a really good positive effect on me. So I try to adjust what I teach now to that. And I also, I mean, I'm trying not to teach stuff that isn't necessarily important. You know, I'm really, I don't know. I feel like I was so very, I came from a lot of teachers that were drum corps guys. And that's a very specific, very cool way of learning rudimental drumming. And I do have that in me. And I have some habits as a teacher coming from that world. But I'm trying to think in a more bigger picture way and how I can teach my students to teach themselves.
Yeah.
But be able to just play for a while and develop good habits. I am down for nerding out on, you know, 5/4 polyrhythms and whatever jazz fusion stuff you want to talk about and mess with and want help with. I'm down for all that. But I do love thinking of bigger picture topics. Obviously, I've carried on about like two basic things that I feel like this whole time for an hour. But yeah, I don't know. It's definitely changed the way I teach the last 4 years, and it's been really fun to jump back into it and talk about the things I value. And also, I've been recording. That's another thing, doing remote recording, as every touring drummer right now is diving into that very fun and also frustrating rabbit hole of sound engineering. But it's been really fun. And like you said, man, applying all this low tension, relaxed motion into recording is like, it's just a constant reminder of this sounds better. Mm-hmm. When you grip the sticks too tight, it affects the sound and it's going to hurt yourself. I don't think I honestly don't think there's enough drummers out there that really value that. I'm seeing a lot of drummers, obviously, as much as we've been on our phones the last 6 months, watching a lot of Instagram drum stuff.
Oh yeah.
And there's some very impressive stuff. Don't get me wrong. It's stuff that I don't truly value as much as I used to. But some of the stuff I think is just kind of dangerous for a lot of young drummers to see. I don't know. There's some techniques that look really cool, but it almost brings back my tendonitis watching some certain things.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's wild. I won't point anyone out, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's important to get your inspiration from people that have done stuff and have made bad mistakes and have fixed them, and people that, you know, think of things in a way that's, you know, I want to keep doing this for a very long time. And if I kept playing the way I was, and if I hadn't changed the last 4 years of my drumming career, I don't think I'd be playing past 50 or 40. I don't think I'd be able to, at least without having surgery or something, you know? So I want to think of a way that's going to make me be able to play the drums for as long as I possibly can. So that is definitely part of what I think about these days.
Absolutely.
So for any drummers out there, you know, I mean, go to danalamarca.com for lessons on for virtual lessons. And any artists out there that are listening that, hey, you want to get the drummer for Maggie Rogers to record drums for you, hit him up, man. Dude, that's cool. That's good to hear. Cause you know, like when this shutdown, the COVID hit, man, I just felt so bad for gigging and touring musicians.
Yeah, you know, like,
oh man. Like, so I was looking at Maggie's site, and you guys, your last show that you did was like March, like mid March or something. Right. I mean, was there anything, that it just got cut off? Did the tour get cut off?
Holy, the whole year, you know, I mean, it was last year, early this year was her record cycle mostly. But she was just nominated for a Grammy early this year. So that brought up some new opportunities for shows for us and herself this year. And we had a busy-ish schedule this year, not as crazy as last year, but it was good. It was going to be, we had some really fun shows ahead of us this summer, but it is what it is, you know. It definitely was a shock and a bummer at first, but I don't know. I try to find the silver lining in everything. Honestly, this opportunity to learn how to record better and how to interact with students again and teach whatever it is that I have in my brain, you know, like that has been such a great experience. And I feel like I was also able to practice in a way that I feel like I've made progress in my playing the past 6 months. I'm sure a lot of drummers and musicians out there have just, especially early on, I just locked myself in a practice room and practiced for like 2 months. And I don't know, there's a certain amount of experience that I've had practicing this whole time that I would never have been able to achieve on the road. Lessons that I've learned, decisions that I've made as far as how I want to play and how I want to sound. I don't know. It's definitely, I am a different person right now than as if I just was on tour this whole time.
That's good, man. That's good to hear. You're the third drummer who's like tour, you know, doing like really good gigs, man. Good with good acts that that said positive things about this, you know, how you use the time, man. That's good to hear.
Thanks.
People need to hear that. I mean, oh my God. It's like, I feel, you know, like somebody like yourself, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, you have a reputation and you have your, Maggie's going to have you play drums for her. You know what I mean? Like the people who want you are going to keep you playing drums. For people who are still like trying to climb that ladder, I guess, or whatever, maybe they had a whole, you know, maybe they were just starting to play with this group. This summer is going to look good. Maybe something's going to come out of it. Those are the people I really feel bad for, man. Cause you know, and what advice do I have for them? I don't have any advice. Just, you know, try to sit with your instrument, try to, I like what you were talking about, which was, you know, you gotta have like a, when we were talking about like the click is your friend, you know, your drum set is your friend. You know, you have a relationship with that instrument and you know, you can't, I don't know. I've had habits of approaching that instrument with such anxiety and pressure. It's unnecessary.
Yeah, it is. And you work through, I mean, I would say there's a place and time for everything. Sometimes taking a step back and taking a break is valuable, which I've done. You know, not play the drums for 2 or 3 weeks, that kind of thing. Maybe not play them for a year if that works for you. But I think more often than not, playing through it is equally and as effective and useful. It's funny to think like, actually, what I wanted to say is, I feel like everyone that's trying to still find, you know, still continue to search for their career in this thing. I would just say that it's going to come back. live shows are going to happen. It's going to, I have a feeling like it's going to happen in a way that's going to be really cool, almost overwhelming. It's going to be all of a sudden, wow, you know, everyone puts out an album. Everyone's trying to get back into the game, the swing of things. There's going to be a lot of new music, a lot of new shows. And that's going to be a really exciting time. And I'm looking forward to that. So, I mean, for anyone that's just still waiting for that, it's, yeah, make use of your time, practice. And then when things open up, you'll be in the best situation with yourself to take those gigs, you know, not take them, but play those gigs.
Those gigs, yeah. Great advice, man. It's such a positive, it's a positive message, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because that's what I'm thinking, you know? When next time I, maybe this is like the, a little aggro view in my head, but next time I set foot on a stage, I just want to slay it. I want it to sound so good. I want to make everyone dance. I want to make everyone move.
Yes.
And I want it to be, I want to sound great, and I want it to be an awesome experience for everyone. Actually, just me saying that and thinking about that is like, makes me really excited and happy to do, to play again in front of a bunch of people. But yeah, I don't know. I think that I've always kept that in mind. Like, you know, this is, and we all wish, that's the thing is, I've always had times like, man, I wish I could just not play shows for a month and just shed this idea.
Wow, yeah.
Just for 1 month, like, just give me like 4 weeks of just time to shed this.
Yeah.
And actually getting that time was a little stressful, I would say. Like, oh my God, all of a sudden I have this endless amount of time, kind of.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, being in quarantine. I was lucky enough to have a small drum room out here that's just mine. So I was just my apartment, my studio, back and forth all of April and May. So, but definitely given that time initially, it was a little like, oh, you know, like almost too much pressure to actually do it. But I worked through it. Actually, drum nerd thing. A big thing that I practiced that I really enjoyed was a bunch of different variations on Steve Reich's clapping music.
Oh, I love that piece. Yeah.
Really cool piece. It's such a simple idea. But it's, you know, as you, I take, it's a piece written for two performers, mm-hmm. and it's written for clapping. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you could check it out to learn more about it, but I learned instead of having two performers do it, I was just learning my right hand was one performer, my left hand was the other, and I'd play the patterns, and then I'd do different foot ostinatos over it. And then I'd also move it around the kit and incorporate flams with the patterns to make it more of a drum set vibe rather than this percussion piece. And I literally, I did that and a few other things, but that was like my grounded practice focus for like 2 months, was just to use that piece and create as many cool challenges as I could just using those rhythms.
I mean, for any listeners, like what Danny's talking about, he's basically driving stick, drinking coffee, and doing his taxes at the same time. I mean, it's like that, yeah, it's for two people, so he's split brain, right? He's playing two parts. And then when you said the foot ostinato thing, I was like, get the fuck out of here.
I got to say, I didn't focus on speed with this. I was focusing on groove, feel, time, sound, and whatever weird variation of it. So, like, I think, I forget what tempo Reich had written it for. I think it's like 160 or 180.
It's like that. I think somewhere along those.
I think I got some of the simpler versions that I came up with up to there. But like, I was starting real slow. You know, I was like, jugga da, jugga da, good da, jugga da, da 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 da. And yeah, I don't know. I learned both hands doing both things. You know, right hand with the ostinato. Essentially, the one clapper, one performer has an ostinato that they keep playing, and the other one starts with the same exact rhythm, and every 12 measures, the pattern gets pulled back an eighth note. So essentially, both performers are playing the same rhythm, but one performer keeps shifting the pattern an eighth note away, so it changes the texture and the rhythm of the thing.
Yeah,
and since it's in, I guess it's in 12/8. Is there even a time signature on it? There's 12 notes and rests per measure.
I haven't looked at the music in like a decade.
I forget. Yeah, yeah. But since there is 12 beats per measure, well, yeah, beats with quotations, there's 12 different patterns. So it's very fun. I loved doing it, and it was a really cool way for me to implement all this idea of take this simple idea and implement relaxed motion and tone and playing. I would play it with a metronome. I'd play it without a metronome. I really tried to just explore as many things as my brain could come up with. Playing a, you know, simple ostinato with my feet, switching the ostinato with my feet reverse. So my left foot was doing, you know, what I could keep going on. It was fun and it was hard, and I still working on it. Like, it's nothing I've completely mastered, but
much respect to you, man.
Thanks.
Much respect. I mean, you kind of get me thinking about that, because it's kind of a way of going back and like getting that feeling of playing percussion, you know,
yeah,
while also like totally improving. I mean, what you're doing is you're just carving paths, man, in your brain. Mm-hmm. For when you have an idea, like I love what you said, which is, you know what, I might have an idea that I want to play, and it might be complicated, but I might have already, like, it's like almost like you're carving that path already.
You know, now.
I like that. That's cool. And, you know, going back to the electronic stuff, you know, like all of those electronic textures that are happening at the same time, you know, I guess by doing that and however many different combinations and shit that you're working on to a click, you, what would have been like, man, that's just too many parts, I can't do that. That might change that now. Totally. You know?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Especially like playing left hand melodic ideas, which in jazz, that, you know, when you're learning comping in jazz, like that's something you get used to in that kind of vibe. Doing it in this way was a little different. So I don't know. I've definitely learned this very more. My left hand started to relax more when I played more complicated patterns with it. Mm. And yeah, it did. It definitely helped with the way I feel more when I'm forced to play something that requires a little more ambidexterity. That's a word. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think going into stuff that requires that skill set, I think I would play it a little, I would groove more now. I don't know. Maybe
that's cool.
When a gig throws that something like that my way, I hope that it'll feel better now by doing some of that right stuff and thinking in that way.
That's cool, man. I'm excited to see wherever that goes in your playing, man.
Me too.
You know, I'm looking forward to, hey, maybe, crossing my fingers, maybe you'll be putting up some Instagram videos now you're recording.
Yeah.
I'm stoked to hear that, man. I need to
do that more. I'm trying to, you know, it's definitely, it helps to some free advertisement doing that stuff. And I get why a lot of drummers do it. I need to get on top of that more for sure.
No pressure, man. You got a great groove. You got a good feel. And now, you know, it's cool, man. You're kind of like advertising a cool, relaxed way of playing, man. People need to see that. Drummers need to see that, man.
Yeah, they do. I got to say, I am not a master at it yet. And I just have this overall idea that I consider that way of playing with most of the stuff that I'm doing these days. And I, you know, I'm still the same drum teacher that certain things have remained the same. I still have that kind of, when we're just working on rudimentary pad stuff, I still have the stuff that my teachers taught me when I was 10. And a lot of it stems from that. But I just having this new awareness, I think is really good. And yeah, it started from having an injury and taking as many, trying to fix it in the healthiest way possible and being desperate. And yeah, that lesson with Illich, man, those two lessons like really opened up a lot of that world to me.
Incredible. So,
yeah, it's fun. It's fun to spot it too. Like I see now I look at drummers for a whole different reason. When you start to go down that rabbit hole, like you're like, oh man, look at his hands. So relaxed. You're not like, I'm not looking at like, yo, that lick was sick. It's like, ooh, his wrist is just so relaxed. Like, I love seeing that stuff now. Like, oh man, bass drum, like tone and just relaxed feel is almost equally as impressive as like the fastest lick I have ever heard, you know, that you can play.
New appreciation for Steve Gadd. Not that there was a lack of there, but
sure.
Holy shit, what a relaxed player, man.
Oh man, yeah. You could feel it. And he's just a relaxed guy. There's metaphors in life through all this too, for like what we're talking about in life. But yeah, oh God, his the space between his notes is just like, it's huge. It's great. He's my favorite, I would say. Gadd is one of my faves.
Dude, we could keep nerding out, man. I want to get, for listeners, for drummers, hit up Dana. DanaLamarca.com for lessons, virtual lessons. And for artists, if you want a great drummer to record drums for you, you got to hit him up, please. And go to his Instagram. It's Instagram.com/DanaLamarca. I'll put all these links in. Check out Maggie Rogers. Go check out the YouTube videos of Dana playing on The Tonight Show and SNL. They're out there, man. Go check them out. I mean, it's really cool.
Thanks.
And dude, I'm happy for you. I was happy when I saw that you got that gig. I was like, that's the guy that should get that gig.
Oh man, that's really good to say. Thank you, man.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on here, dude.
Of course. And we don't know each other that well, but every interaction I've had with you has been positive, and I just knew you were a good drummer. So, you know what I mean? I had to have you on this show, man. So I appreciate you doing it.
Yeah, I appreciate being here. Give New Jersey some love for me, man. I do miss it out there.
Yes, sir, man. We miss you here. All right, listeners, hit up Dana. All the links are in the description. Go hit him. Go click him right now. Follow him. Thank you, Dana.
Thank you,
everybody, for listening. Badum biz to you.
Be well, everyone.